Welcome to PRN's Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman. My guest is Carl Grossman. Carl is State University of New York Professor of Journalism. He focuses on investigative reporting. He's done it for over 40 years. His books include Cover Up, What You Are Not Supposed to Know About Nuclear Power. Well, of course, what you're not supposed to know is what's most important to know. Carl, it's great having you back on the program. I really wanted to have a program updating the situation in Japan from the Fukushima disaster, and literally it's a disaster, and I think the worst of it has really been covered up. I would not want to live in Japan right now, and I wrote a lot about Fukushima in the weeks after the incident happened. I haven't done it for quite some time, so I'm not exactly up to date on it. You're really an expert on this topic. I do know that I think a couple of 3 weeks ago, something like 120 tons of radioactive water leaked from the nuclear plant, maybe one of them, the most affected one, 120 tons. Now, if this got reported, Carl, I wonder how much more has gone on.
Well, I called my first book on nuclear technology, Cover Up, What You're Not Supposed to Know About Nuclear Power, and what we have in front of us here with Fukushima, the Fukushima Daiichi catastrophe, which is continuing, it's ongoing, has to be the biggest, I mean, there's a lot of competition here, but the biggest nuclear cover-up, the biggest, well, among the biggest big lies, I think, in history. This has been an enormous disaster, and as I say, it's ongoing. But you wouldn't know it from authorities in Japan. You wouldn't know it from the folks internationally who were supposed to protect our health, the World Health Organization, back in February. This is not long ago, February 28th. And I'm just reading here from WHO's statement. For the general population inside and outside of Japan, the risks are low and no observable increases in cancer rates above baseline rates are anticipated. I mean, this is the international organization that's supposed to protect our health. And on a national level here in the United States, there has been an enormous cover-up with radiation monitors of the Environmental Protection Agency. This is a few weeks after the accident began, and we began picking up significant spikes of radioactivity here in this country. EPA closed down those radiation monitors and the ones that it let operate instead of, in the beginning, it was actually daily reports. Then it became, at best, monthly from those monitors. I mean, we are in the midst now of an enormous cover-up. And for people in Japan, you say you wouldn't want to be in Japan, live in Japan. It's going to be devastating for the population of Japan, and enormous amounts of radioactivity released. In fact, the journal Nature, it's estimated that the amount of radioactivity released from Fukushima Daiichi more than double that of Chernobyl. Very, very important work was done, published by the New York Academy of Sciences by a team of European scientists led by Dr. Alexei Yablokov, a Russian biologist who analyzed the consequences of the Chernobyl disaster based on medical data from the year of the accident, 1986, to 2004. And that team found 985,000 excess deaths. In other words, near a million deaths, a lot from cancer, of course, as a result of Chernobyl, and not just in Belarus and in the Ukraine and in Russia, but places all over the world where that fallout went. And now you have Fukushima, not one nuclear plant, but several, and not for several weeks, a discharge of radioactivity, but as I say, it's ongoing. It continues to happen today, and this unbelievable, I mean, Goebbels, the Nazi propaganda minister, would be smiling from his grave if he had an opportunity to observe what these nuclear proponents and their supporters have been doing in covering up this terrible disaster.
Oh, indeed, Carl. And as a candidate, Obama said the opposite about nuclear power, commercial nuclear power, than he has done policy-wise as president. I quoted him. It's been so long, I don't remember precisely what he said, but he basically at least implied that that he would not do anything in the way of adding commercial nuclear power, expanding commercial nuclear power, if in any way it could harm the U.S. public and his policies. He has absolutely supported a very, very large expansion of nuclear power and shut down information on people knowing what's going on. I have a friend with some expertise on this. It's been a while since she told me this, but she said something to me to the effect that if you go out in it's raining, you better have an umbrella, because the water that's coming down on you in Chicago or in Boston or in many other parts of America is irradiated. If you're stepping on the wet street, you're going to bring radiation into your home. The water you drink will be irradiated. The food you eat will be irradiated. The air you breathe. I mean, it's very scary stuff. And I think EPA monitors in some cities that maybe were getting high readings, Carl, were shut down.
Shut down. I mean, there was a landmark book written a number of years ago by the late Rosalie Bertell,
yes.
Sister Rosalie Bertell, No Immediate Danger, the subtitle Prognosis from a Radioactive Earth. And that line, no immediate danger, is what the nuclear pushers have used through the years after various incidents, various accidents. And they're back at it again. No, in fact, they're not only saying no immediate danger, no danger, period. And here Sister Bertell comments on this strategy in her book. Let me just read the line. Should the public discover the true health cost of nuclear pollution, a cry would rise from all parts of the world and people would refuse to cooperate passively with their own death. Very strong words from this wonderful nun, and totally accurate. And we're seeing that in regard to Fukushima and just in spades. As to Obama, I too have written a lot of stuff on Obama here. I'm looking at a piece that I wrote for the Huffington Post. This is back in March, last month, in which I talk about Obama pushing another pro-nuclear U.S. energy secretary. This is a guy named Ernest Moniz.
Yes.
He's a physicist, specialty nuclear physics, director of the MIT Energy Initiative, which is heavily financed by the energy industry, including giants like BP and Chevron. But in this piece, listeners could just go to the Huffington Post. The head is Moniz, a pro-nuclear, pro-fracking U.S. Energy Secretary. He's also for fracking. And in the piece, I talk about, let me read. Obama's stance as president on nuclear power has been a change from his position as candidate Obama. And this is a quote from Obama. I start off with a premise. Wish it would be a promise. The premise that nuclear energy is not optimal, and so I am not a nuclear energy proponent, he said, campaigning in Iowa in 2007. And then here, and in fact, if you go to the Huffington Post website where this article is at, it's also on my own website. Listeners can go to, just simplify it, go to carlgrossman.com, www.carlgrossman, one word, call with a K, .com. And you can just click on to the hyperlink where I talk about Obama in this article. The hyperlink where, let me read the line, as he told the editorial board of the Keene Sentinel in New Hampshire that same year, 2007. And if you click onto that hyperlink, you can see Obama saying, I don't think there's anything that we inevitably dislike about nuclear power. We just dislike the fact that it might blow up and irradiate us and kill us. That's the problem. So that was candidate Obama, unlike George W. Bush or others, I mean, who are in leadership, who have been just ignorant of nuclear technology. Obama, as a candidate, understood it. These things could blow up and kill us, he said. But then he gets into the White House, and a number of things happen, and I've written about these, too. Rahm Emanuel was his chief of staff there for so many years, and Rahm Emanuel was... he was the architect of this company called Exelon, which became the, not as a congressperson, which he was for a while, not as chief of staff, obviously, but between his public positions, he was an investment banker, and he put together this this Exelon, a huge number of nuclear power plants based in Chicago, and obviously very much in to nuclear power, you know, as a White House official. Obama, the first energy secretary, selected Stephen Chu, who he's one of these characters who was out of the national laboratory system. He was the director of Lawrence Berkeley Laboratory, National Nuclear Laboratory, loves nuclear power, best thing to come along since sliced bread, discounts the dangers of radioactivity. And one other element besides David Axelrod, besides Stephen Chu, Obama's Secretary of Energy, and his Chief of Staff, Rahm Emanuel, who again, organizes Exelon. Oh, well, incidentally, I've written pieces talking about, I cite Forbes magazine, a little piece they did about Obama's favorite utility, Exelon, and how they've had carte blanche to the White House. Another element, too, is David Axelrod. David Axelrod, chief political strategist of Obama, and continues to be a political strategist for Obama. Guess it was public relations guy for Exelon, David Axelrod. So you have these forces at work which turned Obama from a critic, an opponent of nuclear technology, into a blazing supporter. Since Fukushima, though, I must note that he's no longer saying we must have clean nuclear energy. In his most recent State of the Union address, he didn't mention nuclear at all. But still, he's allowing his agents. Chu has left. Now he wants Moniz to be the Secretary of Energy to do this dirty work, to push, to promote nuclear power, to help the national nuclear laboratories. He had a big one, Obama, in his senatorial district in the state of Illinois. That was Argonne National Laboratory, very deeply involved in nuclear technology and the nuclear industry. So Obama has been an enormous, in my judgment, disappointment when it comes to nuclear power and nuclear technology. And Steve, just let me stress the one thing that's really big difference from when I wrote Cover Up What You're Not Supposed to Know About Nuclear Power, and I began writing that after the Three Mile Island accident, and it was published in 1980, is that lo, these many years later, we're talking about 33 years later, safe, clean, renewable energy technology is here. I mean, wind and solar and geothermal and using algae to create fuel and hydrogen power. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And study after study in recent times has said, we don't need nuclear power. We don't need coal. We don't need fracking. We can power our society with energy that we can live with, safe, clean, renewable energy. It's here. It's here today. But those forces behind nuclear, behind coal, behind natural gas through fracking and so forth, they would essentially push us off an energy cliff.
Kyle, they sure will. It's been a good while, but I can remember writing an article and in it quoting you explaining how we can have clean energy and the fact that it is here, it's workable, we can avoid all of these problems. I've also written about Moniz. I wrote about Stephen Chu. Mm-hmm. I've written many times about Rahm Emanuel in Chicago. He's my mayor, Kyle. I've got to live with this rogue. My God, I mean, it's the worst thing Chicago ever had. And
Mayor Daley wasn't so great either. But,
no, he wasn't.
But Mayor Daley would have the cops beat up all those demonstrators. Rahm Emanuel, with his pro-nuclear stance, would have us all being beaten up by, nuclear bludgeons.
Well, absolutely true, and of course he's waging war on poor people in Chicago. Besides all of that, but he is right with the system. He literally brings the worst of federal policies into Chicago. And as bad as both Daley's were, father and son, I think, and from what I know about Chicago, Emanuel really is the worst of the lot. And unfortunately, I've got to live with this, guys. And in the election that took place, there really wasn't much of a choice, Carl. I mean, you could either die by strychnine or by another type of poison, but there literally wasn't a decent candidate in the race, and there was so much money poured into Emanuel's campaign, and he literally was ineligible to run. He broke Illinois law because he hadn't lived in the state for so long. He claimed a residence that really wasn't his because it was. I think rented out to somebody else, so he wasn't in the state, and literally it went to the Illinois Supreme Court. It really twisted the law to say he was eligible to run for mayor. He was ineligible, but they let him run, and he won, and now we've got him, and we're stuck with him. As bad as Chicago was, it'll get a lot worse. I must say one other thing about Chicago and nuclear power, Carl. I wrote about this again long ago. It was one of the first articles I wrote. Chicago is surrounded by aging, poorly maintained commercial nuclear power plants. I emphasize both. The poor maintenance is appalling. Literally, there's a possibility that one of them could go down. We could have a Fukushima incident. And I can remember writing to the effect that if downtown Chicago is downwind of the plant that goes down, if a bad enough accident happens, then everyone in the city in its path might have to evacuate and do it on short notice, and they might never be able to come back. So this is the sword of Damocles that hangs over my head. Chicago, I guess, is the most nuclearized city in America, literally surrounded by these plants.
And these are excellent. I mean, and also, we have an agency called the Nuclear Regulatory Commission in the United States. It replaced the Atomic Energy Commission in 1974, and because there's not been a new nuclear power plant ordered and completed since way back, since 73, to keep the nuclear industry going, what the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, should be called the Nuclear Rubber Stamp Commission, has been doing is extending the licenses, the operating licenses of nuclear plants, including those that encircle, the many that encircle Chicago, from 40 years, which is as long as, when you go back into the literature, as long as the folks thought back in the 50s and early 60s, you could run a nuclear plant, because particularly the metals become so embrittled by the radioactivity. You're just asking for danger after 40 years. So that's what the licenses would go for. I mean, conventional plants, they could go for many, many decades longer, but nukes, 40 years. Well, in recent years, what the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has been doing is extending the licenses from 40 to 60. It's done that for most of the nuclear plants in the United States, including those around Chicago. Out of the 104 nukes in the United States, now near 80 have gotten their licenses extended to 60 years. And the Nuclear Regulatory Commission seriously is talking about extending the licenses of all the nuclear plants in the U.S. to 80 years. 80 years. Imagine if you had an automobile that was 80 years old and you would take it out on Interstate 80 for a little ride across country. 80 years old, you know, a car from the 1930s. You know, maybe you could poke around your neighborhood. But what they're doing with these nuclear plants is to allow them to go to twice as long as they ever thought they should be able to operate. And they've also, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, with no exceptions, every license for an extension that comes before every application for a license extension that comes before the NRC, the Nuclear Rubber Stamp Commission says okay to. They've also, at the same time, uprated, there's a word they use, uprate these nukes. In other words, allow them to run hotter and harder to generate more electricity. Here's our government under Obama just absolutely asking for disaster, to consider Fukushima and what that's done to a good portion of Japan. And I've been to Japan. It's a very densely populated area. Lots of people have been affected by the radioactivity, which includes Tokyo. Tokyo has been hit as hotspots of radioactivity all through Tokyo. In fact, I recently did a television program, which folks can watch on YouTube. Fukushima 2 years after is its title. I did it as the chief investigative reporter for WVVH television here in New York. And it was based on people who were figures at a very important conference that Dr. Helen Caldicott, organized in New York City at the New York Academy of Medicine, in which you had speaker after speaker. I mean, these are independent scientists. These aren't these characters who work for the World Health Organization, which is very close to, let me just note here, the International Atomic Energy Agency. That's like the international version of the Nuclear Rubber Stamp Commission, the International Atomic Energy Agency. And in fact, there was a deal made between World Health Organization and International Atomic Energy Agency in the 50s that the WHO will say nothing, make no report, make no statement on anything having to do with radioactivity unless it would be cleared by this IAEA, which was set up to boost, to promote nuclear power. And in any case, Dr. Caldicott's conference didn't have those kind of, scientific prostitutes at it. It had independent scientists, including Dr. Alexei Yablokov, speaking about the consequences of Fukushima. And, I mean, they're going to be dire. The thing about radioactivity, short of, a bomb, which will kill a lot of people very quickly. With radioactivity, people don't fall down dead immediately. It takes a few years often for the impacts of radioactivity there's an incubation period or a latency period to manifest in cancer and other diseases. But it's going to be a horrid, the consequences in Japan. And then you have to also consider the genetic impacts of the radioactivity, which will be here for eternity. But in this video, it's an hour program, and again, it's on YouTube. Just go to my name, Fukushima 2 years after, and you can watch the whole show. And among the most disturbing aspects of the show, because I asked a number of people from Japan who were at the conference, why, after the Japanese government saying in the wake of Fukushima, we're out of nuclear, we're not going to have nuclear on this volcanic chain of islands any longer, we're going to close down all our plants, and in fact they did initially, and go to solar and go to wind, and we don't need nuclear in Japan or anywhere that they understood. But then there's been a reversal of that, very conservative government now, and power in Japan is looking to not only revive the nuclear get those nuclear plants that have been shut down operating again, but revive nuclear power in Japan, keep going with nuclear power. And a professor from Tokyo, professor of law, her comment as to why this turnabout was that the Japanese government very, very much wants to get nuclear weapons. And to the Japanese government, particularly this conservative Japanese in government power now, nuclear power, commercial nuclear power, is important. It's vital if Japan is going to become a nuclear weapons power. And this is a global situation of the connection between nuclear power and nuclear weapons, let me stress, too. Indeed, in terms of Huffington Post, there was a piece I had maybe about 6 weeks ago on the connection between nuclear power and nuclear weapons, and how any country that gets itself a nuclear facility has then the material, the plutonium that's produced in a nuclear facility as a waste product, and trained personnel for nuclear weapons. And I note how the Indians were provided with a reactor by Canada, our neighbor Canada, and we, this is the old Atomic Energy Commission, trained Indian technicians and engineers, and lo and behold, in 1974, India had the bomb. And what that piece concludes, and again, in terms of nuclear weapons, is that there's this inextricable link between nuclear power and nuclear weapons, and as nuclear power continues, and it's continuing to proliferate around the world, we have been through, perhaps we're still in the middle of, a crisis with North Korea and nuclear weaponry. Well, that's, you know, one chapter in what's going to be inevitable as the years go on if we're going to continue to allow nuclear technology to spread around the world. And just let me add to that. Some people might think that in this piece I advocate a nuclear-free world. And I note that the United Nations has established nuclear weapons-free zones all around the world. Africa is a nuclear weapons-free zone. South America is a nuclear weapons-free zone. Large chunks of the South Pacific, nuclear weapons-free zones. And what I say in that piece, which you can just search for it, it's on Huffington, that's also on my website, carlgrossman.com, is that we have to, it sounds impractical, it sounds highly radical, we're going to have to get this genie back in the bottle. And some people will say that's impossible, we can't do it. We have to continue with what we've been doing, which is sort of like using carrots and sticks to somehow control the spread of nuclear weaponry. I don't think that's going to, in the long run, work. And I believe that, again, it sounds radical, it sounds impractical. We have to do what, well, after World War One, folks realized that that using chemical gases, that were using chlorine gas and mustard gas in World War One, was horrific. We have to outlaw these horrible weapons, and the world did. I believe we have to outlaw nuclear technology, both nuclear power and nuclear weapons, and make the entire world, not just places that are part of it, nuclear weapons-free zones, but the entire planet a nuclear-free zone. No nuclear technology, no nuclear power, nuclear weapons, if we're going to make it through the 21st century.
Carl, I absolutely agree with you. I wish we had more time. We're out of time. There is no question that nuclear technology is absolutely the world's most dangerous, and if we don't find a way to eliminate it, then it may eliminate us.
Yes.
Carl, I look forward to getting you back again for an update. I hope it won't be to talk about the next disaster that may come along, but sooner or later, we both know if this isn't stopped, it's inevitable that there will be another disaster, and it may be a lot worse than what we've seen up to now.
A pleasure to be back anytime.
Thank you, Carl. Join us over the weekend, Saturday and Sunday, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Make it a regular habit.